Welcome one and all once again to Duel Worlds in episode 90. We're very near that 100 mark. I'm sure we've done over 100 episodes between the stuff we don't number, but neither here nor there. Joining us this week, we have Martin.
Hi.
Who is now a Sony sympathizer after this week.
I am? Why?
You were a trigger away from buying a PlayStation Vita. You are now a PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale defender.
I like the game. Sue me.
We will. We have Chad.
What up?
Who apparently has lost all his energy after talking about Dota 2 last week.
Shut up. That's not why. I lost all of my heart because I played Amnesia last night.
Ouch. And we have Daniel, who's going to call him on that opinion.
Explosions?
That's what my opinion is.
There we go. So, we got a bunch of new games this week and stuff like that, and we're going to kick it off with Martin because I really want to hear. I've been looking forward to PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. I think it has its share of problems. Reviews are like, it's a good starter game, so I wanted to hear what your thoughts are, because you do seem to be enjoying it.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, I think it's a good starter game, because I think they got the fundamentals right with it, and actually, now that I've played a bunch of it, I think that some of the Smash comparisons are not that accurate, to be honest, because the more you play it, you realize that scoring through supers actually changes the game a lot, in my opinion. Especially if you don't play the free-for-all mode, but play in like 2v2 or 1v1. Because in those situations, for the most time, you are not really trying to go for the level 3 supers, because it takes just way too long, and you're mostly using level 1, level 2s, which for the most part require you to set those up in a good way. And if you play with people who know what they are doing, especially in one-on-one, it can be very difficult to set the other player up in a situation where you can actually hit him with the level 1. And that makes the game actually pretty interesting, I think, because it doesn't really matter how much you hit him with normal attacks, as long as you're not able to hit him with his super, and that's actually pretty interesting.
It's interesting, but it was also one of my problems with the game, in the fact that, and it sounds like you're saying it works in your advantage once you get into the game, but the fact that being hit and hitting aren't really something that's a big part of the game. It's like
it is a big part of the game. But if you are able to that's why the game actually has like a combo tutorial with every character. Because there's actually a AP multiplier which kicks in as soon as you do good combos on your enemies. So actually hitting them in a way that's interesting, like a big combo which can be a lot more complex, I think, than anything Smash Bros. Has to offer, actually grants you a lot of AP, which you then can use in a nice super setup. So it is way more important than you might actually think to master it. Of course, you can just mash out stuff, but it's not going to help you out much if the players know what they are doing.
Okay. And this is something that I said from when it was announced and when it was shown. It's like, there are a lot of differences from Smash Bros. And I think but the problem is, and this is the problem they have to overcome with marketing and, you know, demos and stuff, and they did a decent job with the beta, is that it looks like Smash Bros. It smells like Smash Bros. It's only not Smash Bros. Once you start to actually get into it. And I think that's the initial impression that it's going to turn some people off, because for all its faults that people may have with it, the reason Smash Bros. Is like, that's performing it is because it's pick up and play. You can do the same thing with every character and kind of work out for you. You can mash buttons and end up winning.
That's just the thing. I think the game is in that way more complex than Smash Bros. It even, like I said, the button layout is even just very similar. You have to use two buttons and direction. This game you have to use
three buttons. Well, actually, more well, it's three buttons to jump, block,
three buttons in directions. And, of course, all the characters have very different attacks on every button. But at least we are trying to make the button
evolve the thumb.
Like someone else, I've seen someone today break it down for some of the characters. Playing it after a while, it just made sense automatically. But for example, if you pick a character like Sweet Tooth, all the square attacks are his melee attacks, all his triangle attacks are related to his shotgun or more range attacks, and all the circle attacks are his fire attacks. And if you think about that, all the characters have this difference between the three buttons, and then it starts to make sense how each character actually works.
But I mean, couldn't they have simplified that a bit by making like if one button with like everybody's melee attack, one button with everybody's like mid range attack, one button with everybody's long range attack?
The problem is not every character is entirely melee based.
Well, no, they aren't. I mean, there are like Drake for some reason is not really good with melees.
Yeah,
he's more.
Radek, for example. Radek, still, all his melee attacks are on square. That is actually the one thing every character has in common.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm happy to see you're enjoying it. Like I said, it seems to be getting good reviews, and I always said I think this is a great build for a second game.
Exactly. And then one thing, what I want to say, the gameplay is great. The online is great. I don't think previously I would have said BlazBlue is has the best netcode any fighting game ever. I think
now it's
All Stars Battle Royale. It feels like playing offline. I have not had a single game with lag or anything. It's incredible. I don't know how they did it. It's awesome. And you're playing most of the time with four people. So kudos to them for pulling that off. That's actually something Nintendo should really learn from them for the next Smash Bros. Game. Because
I assume that's something they're working on. The other thing I wanted to ask about is, I've seen it, what is the purpose of the levels?
The levels for the characters are basically just there to unlock like profile stuff for yourself. It's comparable to in Street Fighter 4, you had your profile where you could pick like a tagline for yourself or a little avatar icon, stuff like that. That's what the levels are for. They basically just unlock that stuff.
Okay. Is it interesting to unlock, or is it
time to time you see, oh, I've unlocked a bunch of profiles, and then you pick it. And that's basically the other problem the game has. It's basically they locked down the gameplay and the online, and that stuff is great. For first game, I think that's good, especially in the fighting game genre, but the next game, they have to be added when it comes to content, I think. Because basically, for the single player, you have these combat challenges where you different task for every character. That's interesting, but not for everyone. So the main part would probably be the arcade mode. Just like you get a movie, but that's also just standstill pictures with voiceover. So that's already something I don't enjoy particularly. You get a bunch of fights, then you meet a rival, then you get a quick cut in engine cutscenes, which are for the most part, pretty funny when you fight your rival, but then you don't really get a video after that.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I saw a playthrough of Drake's storyline on YouTube, and it's like he has these thing with Sai, and then there's like nothing after it, and there's like no build up to the final boss. He just kind of shows up.
So it isn't really a story. It's just an intro. You fight an outro. Character who has beaten that guy and apparently has gotten some new power. And that's basically the story for everyone. Not really interesting, and I think that is something I can understand for the first game, but on the other hand, to keep with the Smash Brothers comparison, they have done a lot more when it comes to the single player portion. I mean, they had this weird fan fiction single player mode in the last game, which is incredibly stupid, but it was also kind of fun that way.
It was a ton of fun. It may have been incredibly stupid, but at some point, it was something different for a fighting game to actually have like a story mode.
And that's actually something I wanted to see here. That would have.
Or even going back to like Mei, which didn't have the subspace emissary, but it had the an adventure mode where you went through like different aspects of different characters' histories. Like the first stage would be Mario, and then you'd have like that temple from Zelda with the redeads or whatever.
But like I said, it's not like they can't improve on that on the second game. But the gameplay part, I think they have nailed down. The other thing is. Character selection. Well, a lot of people have been complaining about the third-party characters. I think it's not that bad. If you think about it, it's just 4 characters out of 20, so it's not... On the other hand, I would have really liked to have seen more older solid characters. They could dig into, like, I mean, there's, for example, Vibri from Vibribbon. That would have been great. What's his name? Rocking from Jumping Flash, for example, on PlayStation 1. That would have been cool. Tomba could have been cool. There's also some PS2 games never cool. God Hunter and what was the other name? I think Primal or something like that. A bunch of Sony Cambridge games back in the day. And
no Team Ico.
So, but they don't include them.
Yeah, I don't think the complaint... Well, I mean, part of the complaint was the number of third-party characters, but I think the other thing was, like, if you asked somebody when this game was announced which third-party characters you would have wanted in this game, I don't think Big Daddy and New Dante and Raiden would have been the top of the list. You would have expected people like Cloud and or Croft and Solid Snake, and I think the thing is, like, people wanted third-party characters. It just weren't the people you would expect from a PlayStation legacy.
That's true.
Crash Bandicoot. Activision's not doing anything with him, so, you know.
Yeah, but if you're Activision, and I assume this happens with a lot of third parties, is, like, you look at it as you can either tarnish your brand, like, if this game had came out and wasn't so well, if it comes out and doesn't sell that well, like, it's like, you know, it's a game that your character's associated with now.
But Activision doesn't have a brand for Crash Bandicoot anymore. So
but that shows you how high the stock for this game was. I mean, even some of Sony developers, like Team Ico, I heard, didn't want their characters in this game. And I think Sucker Punch, whoever made Infamous was like, they wanted both versions of Cody in this game. So it's like the developers didn't have the powers to veto this or to get that. I mean, if you hear the story from the other side, like with Smash Bros. Brawl, for instance, the story was that Kojima was the one who went to Nintendo and asked them to put Solid Snake into Brawl, not Nintendo seeking him out for it. And I think that's the difference between, you know, like, technically speaking, I think Smash Bros. Brawl would have been the best-selling Metal Gear Solid game to date.
So, even though they might not be the characters you
expected,
thing is, they are. Feels very distinct in the overall roster. You didn't really get a chance to try them out during the beta, but they feel very distinct. Big Daddy is one of the characters who stands out the most because just so big and slow, and at first feels kind of clunky, and you really have to figure out how to fight with him, especially in something so hectic as this game. And on the complete other spectrum, you have like Raiden, who has, like, who feels at times like you are playing just a character action game because you have all the three buttons are just square, are his sword attacks, triangle his foot attacks, and on circle you have his jump attack. So it kind of feels like playing a character action game with him, which is pretty cool actually. So they feel. If you pick something like somebody like Radek, and you have to do a zoning game and basically mostly use his weapons, and it's pretty interesting actually, and a lot of characters I think feel more distinct than the ones in Smash Bros.
Okay, Final question, I think, before we move on, is are the supers balanced in your experience?
That's the thing. I think for the most part they are. There are a few which I think are very underpowered. For example, the level 1 of Big Daddy, I think, is very underpowered because it comes out in a weird way. It comes out in a low arc. And shortly before Big Daddy, and the area of effect of the little sister that comes out is very small, so it's pretty hard to hit, especially compared to other level ones who just go out straight and make it actually pretty easy to get like three kills with them if you set it up in the right way. And the other one that stands out for me is Sir Daniel's level 1, which also comes out diagonally, which is pretty bad, because most of the characters, if you just stand in front of them and try to hit them with it, it just goes over them. Way to hit people with it is if you combo into it, which still seems pretty hard. I have to try more stuff out, but at this point I think it's pretty hard, because it's not a guaranteed hit, depending on how people dodge. And the other possibility is if your level has different platforms, most of the time, so Daniel can stand on the lower platform, hit people on the upper platform. That's another use of his. But those are really the ones that stand out, which seem pretty underpowered. The rest seems fine at this point, but it's still early to the life of this game, so to speak. So we will see how it develops.
Okay. Thank you for that. Chad, you have been playing Amnesia?
Well, maybe. I guess playing it isn't the right word, so much as cowering in front of my screen and slapping buttons on my keyboard. People who made that game are dicks. They're assholes. The job application had one question, and it said, "Are you an asshole?" And if they said yes, they got hired at Frictional Games, because Jesus Christ. I've never cursed and screamed so much in my life.
Really?
Yeah,
and now you
seriously.
Know why I prefer to sit back and watch somebody else who's actually going to get scared by it play it.
Yeah, I totally recorded myself. I streamed it out last night, so that was emasculating as hell. It's so brilliant. Like, I mean, I hate it. I hate everything about it. But the way that they make me hate it is brilliant. Because the fact
you pay in a good way, is that what you're saying?
There's so many times, no, I just hate it, but the fact that they're able to make me hate it this much is testament to their skill in making games, I guess, I would say. Because there's these long, long stretches where you have nothing to do but be scared. Like, you're just walking down a hallway. There's not really much to look at because there's darkness all around you. There's no real tasks to complete. There's no weapon to reload. There's nothing. It's just, well, you're going to walk here and be scared. So have fun with that, I guess.
Does anything happen, or is it just the fact that...
No, the game's very good at, like, just, like, you'd never know really what's going to happen next. And that's why it's scary, because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
and
at any moment
something does, and it makes it much, much worse.
Any moment, there could totally be a monster. It's very, it's... And that's another thing. You'll go these long stretches without encountering the monster, and instead of feeling safer, you're like, okay, it's been 2 minutes since I've seen it. It's got to be around this corner. Oh, it's been 3 minutes since I've seen it. I'm definitely fucked now. 4 minutes? Oh, God, where is it? Where is it? And it just keeps building like that. It's really, really good at building that sense of suspense.
Yeah, and I think that's something that a lot of horror video games miss nowadays, is that it's not necessarily about the jump scares or anything. It's really about what you are putting in your head as far as what's going to happen to you.
Horror and I think Amnesia does it the best of any game right now.
Yeah, especially because, like, I get so scared just regularly. I don't like scary things. The Ring is the scariest movie ever to me, because that's how not well I deal with scary things. And so Amnesia was kind of... You're completely helpless, too, which is the thing... Like, yeah. Even in early Resident Evil games, which are still considered scary, like, you could shoot stuff. No matter what happened, if there was an enemy in front of you, you could kill it, and you'd be safe again. But Amnesia, it's just like, nope, you gotta hide. You gotta run away and hide. That's it.
Which makes everything, like, the whole feeling of you don't know what's coming worse, because you don't know if it's gone, so you've gotta sort of get out of the cupboard that you decided you were going to sit in, and if it's still there, then that's tough. You've got to get back in that cupboard.
It's not like press E to activate door either. Like, you have to open that shit yourself.
Like, you have to actually move the mouse in a motion that would open the door.
Yeah. So it's like, you can control the door so well, it just... Which sounds really trivial, but it's like...
When they at some points they put it so doors open in different ways. Like, subsequent doors will open in different ways. So yes. You get used to open doors one way, and then you find one door that's got to be opened the other way, and then you start panicking.
Usually panic from something.
Yeah.
And to add to your monster dilemma, I think what's great is that you also have to manage your character's sanity, because as soon as you hide in the dark, you're starting to lose your sanity, or you can't actually look at the monsters, or you lose your sanity.
Yeah, that I've been in that situation many times where it's like, okay, I need light or I'm going to go crazy, but it's right fucking there, so I can't turn my light on.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, just moments.
All so, the very, very well-made, terrible game that no one should play. It's basically where I'm at.
And by that, it means everyone should play it.
Yeah.
If you value your nerves, stay away, and if you like an immersive... terrifying experience, then you should play it. The story strikes me as really, really, really cheesy so far.
Yeah, it is.
It's not like super big part of it.
It's
anyway.
Definitely not the highlight of the game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So that's
then who
pretty.
Who plays horror games? The story.
Okay. Have you been playing anything new, Daniel?
Oh, I played the new Borderlands 2 DLC, and it's much better than the first one, fortunately.
And it has a Hulk Hogan knockoff on it.
The what? Yes,
Hulk Hogan
it does,
knockoff.
Yeah. And I was it's quite funny. Some of the writing is... So you find out in the... via, like, sort of the messages that sort of get played out in the environments as you're walking around, that the Hulk Hogan knockoff, he actually has his voices bleeped out in the universe... And he goes, it's fucking bullshit. I can't say half my vocabulary. It's great. Although I just want one thing ticked me off with this, and it was the fact that they're recycling a bit too many enemies. Like, we have enemies that are supposedly working for Torg, but they're saying things that Hyperion employed. They're like saying things about Handsome Jack and stuff, and it like. That doesn't make any sense because he's dead and you don't work for Handsome Jack. And
that's pretty bad.
And then it really hit me, like, it was fine. Like, maybe I was just like, maybe they just forgot. Maybe it was just an accident. And then they started recycling all the robots and I was like, nah, that's it. If you like one type of enemy, maybe I could forgive you, but if there's more than one type of enemy where they've just kept all the voice lines and they're all Hyperion, then that's kind of bad.
Well, I mean, it is DLC. I mean, did you expect them to have, like, new sets of enemies?
They did it all for the first one. Every enemy in the first one has new voice lines.
It seems like a minor thing to say for...
There was kind of like... And it commits the sin of the video games do, which is... How come they've got cool new toys and I don't? Where the enemies have new vehicles. There's these cool motorbikes that drive around. And there's one type that just drives into you and explodes. And there's one type with a giant spike on the front. And it rams into you. And it's like, why can't I drive motorbikes around? I've got this car that I've been using for the entirety of the main game. Why can't I drive a motorbike? You know?
That I do agree with you. I always hate when the enemies get these fancy weapons that you can either pick up or get if you destroy, if you get them
in
off
fact,
of it.
Things like that was the worst thing about raids, is the fact that the ammo handling was not done by guns that your enemies dropped. You had to loot them off them, and most of the time you didn't even get any ammo. And so I think they're on the right track. Obviously, it's sort of a curve. They're getting better with them, even though I think after Borderlands 1, they shouldn't really have to sort of start again. I hope the next one is like more of the main story. Like, there's a giant H floating in the sky that's owned by Hyperion. I want to blow that shit up, Gearbox.
Someone is bitter.
It's not like bitter, it's like, it would just be the best idea for like an extended story-based DLC, is blowing that giant space station up.
Maybe that's the final DLC, going where no one has gone before. Okay, anything else?
I say it's worth the money. If you've got a choice between the first and the second DLC, buy the second one, it's much better. Although you would probably, and if you haven't bought the season pass yet, I would wait for the next one. If the next one's any good, then buy the season pass.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
Okay. Before we return to Martin to talk about Hitman, I think we've all kind of had time with the DMC demo this week.
Yep.
I know it's on the 360. Is it out on the PS3 as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's where I played it. Because playing DMC on a 360 just strikes me as really wrong. I need a DualShock for that game.
Just start a petition.
Yeah, but doesn't really use the second analog stick for much.
But it's I've been playing Devil May Cry games my entire life on that controller, and anything else just feels really weird to me.
Fair enough. So I guess what were you talking
about? It should feel weird for you anyway.
Oh god, yeah, we'll get into that.
Well, you can get into it now.
Where's my lock-on? Where's that, first of all?
Yeah! That's something I missed as well!
That's the biggest... oh god, the fact that there isn't that, just... I kept expecting them to introduce it, like, oh hey, by the way, you can do this with this button, so do it. And then
kind of makes it hard to use moves like, I don't know, the stinger?
Like everything?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that really, really...
And the pistols are garbage.
Yeah,
I was about to say, it would make the pistols harder to use. It always seems to auto-lock on the nearest enemy.
The pistols they don't do damage at all.
Well, in my mind, the pistols have never really been for doing damage. They're just more for chaining purposes.
Yeah,
I never...
But then again, the chaining in this game is broken.
Yep.
It's straight up broken. I don't know if people have seen the videos out there. Basically, you now can dodge an enemy's move, attack with your scythe, and basically within two attacks you get to the triple S ranking. And
yep.
You don't drop in ranking as long as you don't get hit. It doesn't matter if you, I don't know, run around for 5 minutes.
That sounds pretty bad.
It is
terrible.
Well, for the whole level, it doesn't matter if you get a triple S ranking every fight. You will get the triple S ranking at the end of the demo anyway.
That's one of my favorite things. That's why I get so much longevity out of these games, is because, alright, I beat it. It's between the hundreds of difficulty levels they have, and the comboing mechanic. Because I will play through levels hundreds of times because, okay, I want to get triple S's on everything. I want to come out of every fight with a triple S. Like, the ranking is a big deal for me. And the fact that they've completely screwed it up here really, really is going to diminish my enjoyment of this game, I think.
Yeah. And I think the combat overall just feels dumbed down. I don't think it's challenging at all. I mean, I think even when you set it up, it says, like, pick Nephilim. If you the difficulty level Nephilim, if you've played Devil May Cry before, so of course I picked that, and even that was, I don't know, super easy.
Yeah. I don't know, so, I didn't really make too many judgments on that, because I'm so used to playing on, like, Dante Must Die, that I feel like everything was going to feel easy no matter what anyway.
Yeah,
but
the thing, I didn't even bother with the next difficulty, but from what I've heard, it's not much better. So
I played enough. I played the first level. I didn't even bother with the boss. I was like, yeah, I have a pretty good idea about what this is, and I don't know that I like it.
The thing is, if you say, like, how does it compare to other Devil May Cry games, I think it's garbage. If
yep.
you say it's, how is it as an as any nilly-willy action game, I guess it's decent, but for Devil May Cry game, it's nothing.
And, yeah, that's what? Pretty much where I come down on it as well. It's like, I probably wouldn't be this harsh on it if it was any other game. But because it comes from this franchise that I would probably say is my favorite franchise in gaming.
It's one of my favorites as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a Devil May Cry fan. I was going to say, I don't find it as fluid as something like Bayonetta. And that's kind of what threw me for a loop. It's like, I mean, maybe I'm just not, you know, I only played through it once because I didn't really find it that enjoyable. But I just didn't see it being like something I'd return to. And out of the platform, it just seems meh to me.
Yeah, Bayonetta kind of topped Devil May Cry, to be honest, when it comes to the fighting systems, I think. So I can understand when you talk about the fluidity of the fighting. I guess that was never really a strong point of Devil May Cry. But at least it involved some form of skill to chain everything together. And that made the fighting interesting, which I don't think the fighting this is interesting at all.
It strikes me as a lot like it looks cool, and so I think it's kind of playing towards that, hey, you can come in and you don't necessarily need to be the most dexterous player in the world, but you can still have fun and do cool stuff and make your character look cool, but it doesn't have anywhere near the same depth that I feel like a game like Devil May Cry 3 had, especially.
Which I think is alright for any other franchise. I mean,
yeah,
God of War is just doing fine with it, and I'm enjoying God of War, but I come to Devil May
Cry. But God of War doesn't have a pedigree of like difficulty either.
Yeah.
Like, Devil May Cry is the action game version of a fighting game. It is like, the combat is that deep.
Mm.
And
I mean,
I don't see it.
God might be the only thing that's deeper.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I'm not. I'll play it because maybe I'll be proven wrong. But I'm very much not optimistic. And I was optimistic before. We'll give them a chance. It's a new developer, but we'll see. I sat back and said I'll play it first and then make my judgments. And I've played it, and my judgment has been made.
And but you're still going to play it anyhow, which is why they continue to win anyhow. Because if you buy it, they just get an excuse.
Yeah.
To
well, I'm a whore. Well, I don't know what you want from me.
So, the thing is, I played it, I didn't have much of expectation anyway, and was still disappointed, and I'm not going to play it. The other thing is, I wanted to talk about performance. As we all know, the game is running at 30 frames per second, which is already garbage for a Devil May Cry game, but let's just ignore that part. I think it's kind of an achievement for Ninja Theory to have the actual gameplay run at a decent frame rate. Because I think it is running at a decent frame rate. So once you actually play it. The problem is, though, at least on PS3, as soon as any kind of cutscene starts, it drops to like 12 or 15 frames a second.
I still think DMC4 looks better.
Oh, yeah, and that as well. You can clearly tell that they had even at 30 frames of a second, they had still trouble with Unreal Engine doing such a game. Because you still have like lots of empty corridors running around and not much else there. So you can clearly tell that Ninja Fury is just not there on a technical level.
Wait, did Devil May Cry used to run at 60?
Yeah.
Oh, it looked, because it was so frenzied and fluid, like you could tell the difference between 60 and 30.
Yeah, because I know Bayonetta ran at 60 as well.
Yeah. So, you notice it. You notice it. There is no feel of 60 frames per second. I'm sorry. Such a thing does not exist.
And there's no feel of Devil May Cry from it, and that's... Like, I played Devil May Cry 3 and Devil May Cry, even Devil May Cry 4, which people considered to be bad, but I'd go on Devil May Cry 4, Devil May Cry 3, watch YouTube videos of people playing, because you see the things that some of these highest-ranked players in the world are doing, and it's kind of awe-inspiring in a way.
Yeah.
And then I just don't see this happening at all with
The videos
DMC.
You see of Devil May Cry players are just exposing how broken the systems are. That's the videos you see right now.
Which saddens me to no end.
It kind of just looks boring. Dodge, Skyf attack. Dodge, Skyf attack. Yay, triple S ranking.
I was going to say, I mean, aside from the gameplay, now, what do you folks think of like the new Dante and stuff like that? And because I know that was a big part of the outcry when this game was announced as well.
I don't know.
Positioned as an origin story, so in that regard, like, I don't mind it so much. But we'll see how they handle that. Ninja Theory has always been pretty good at the story aspects of their games, I think, the storytelling. So, I don't know. We'll see.
The small glimpses we get, I think, seem like they could be interesting or fun. I don't know. The new Dante seems to be alright right now. The only problem is once I started the boss fight, and the boss fight, the dialogue with the boss consisted for, like, mostly...
of them cursing at each other.
Fuck you. Fuck you. No, fuck you. Fuck you. No.
It's funny, because that mirrors what I was saying the entire time I was playing this game.
I mean, dialogue was not one of the strong points of Devil May Cry, but at least it was cheesy in a fun way, and that was just...
That kind of turned me off. And then he says something when he kills him as well, right? I don't remember what, though.
Probably. Like, he was always... Dante was always not outright, like, offensive in his language. He was always just really clever and witty. Like, previous Dante would come up with ways of saying the equivalent of fuck you to a boss without actually saying fuck you.
Yeah, kind of.
And, I don't know, but like I say, the characterization and the story and stuff, those are all great, and it's good to have those be high quality in any game, but that's not why I come to that series. I come to it for the challenge of the gameplay and the difficulty I see in executing combos and scoring a high rank, and I'm not getting that from DMC so far.
Okay. Well, we'll have more on that, I'm sure, when it actually does come out in January.
Not from me.
Not from me. We will see. I'm sure you'll get bored and you'll find a reason to buy it for cheap.
Maybe.
I'll talk about it in January.
Moving on to one more game, you've been playing the new Hitman title.
Yeah. 6 years in the making. Well, not really, but it has been 6 years since the last one, Blood Money, which I think was a brilliant game. Best in the series. Just top to down, great title.
That's never a good start.
This one. I don't know. It looks pretty. I think it's pretty, and I'm actually surprised how well it performs on the PS3, and I heard also it performs pretty well on 360, so that's good compared to the other AAA titles that have come out lately, like Assassin's Creed, so that's good. I think Contracts mode is really cool, where you can get into level, pick different targets, kill them in a specific way, and then load that contract up to other players, and then they can try to do that themselves. That's really cool. And the game itself is really fun as long as you're playing one of the sandbox levels, which means you have a level where you can walk around wherever you want, as long as you, I don't know, have the right disguise or something like that. So you can get into specific areas,
And you basically can try to figure out all those different ways in which you can actually kill your targets. The problem is, this game has a bunch of levels, which are just very linear, and a lot of times don't even involve killing anyone. And those just feel like a bad, clunky stealth game from 10 years ago, and are not very fun to play at all. I guess they have to include them because they have more story focus, but the story is totally uninteresting, so it doesn't really pay off, I think. And that's really a bummer, because I don't know how long I played it, probably I think like 12, 15 hours, and I will say I enjoyed only half of it, which is a shame. It could have been much better, I think. Because the systems are there, although the system works kind of weird in this one, but I could live with that. And all the systems work well. For the most part, like for example, when you get into killing someone with melee weapons or something like that, that could have been pretty clunky in previous games. That now works flawlessly. But, like I said, just some of the levels are just badly designed. And the Hitman series just stands and falls with the level design. That's a key point. Otherwise, what's there? A bad third-person stealth game with nothing interesting happening. And that's not fun at all. So, half good, I would guess. Contract mode, though, is very fun.
Okay, so it is one good thing in this game. But I'm assuming if I ask you, it's not worth buying the game for.
What?
If you were to tell us, would it be worth buying the game for just this one mode?
Difficult to say, because I think a lot of Hitman players actually had most of the fun in previous titles with setting up contracts like that. Because previously people have just challenged themselves through forums and stuff like that to do this stuff, and now it's an actual mode, which is pretty cool. So, I don't know, at least not at full price, I think. If you can get it for, like, half the price, because only half of the game is good, I think it would be alright.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, because at this rate it will probably be $20 by Christmas.
It should be.
That's game sale.
Yeah, or they have, like, Black Friday deals here in Europe from Amazon, so...
Okay. So I think that's it for what everybody's been paying this week. Okay. We can move on over to news.
Yep. Oh, I played Slenderman too, but I'm not talking about that, so...
So, what... Why are you playing all these scary games now?
I started on Halloween, because, I don't know, like, that's a thing. And then I promised I would beat them both eventually, so I've just kind of been working my way through them.
Okay. Isn't Slenderman really short, though?
Well, in theory, you should be able to beat it in about... half an hour, 45 minutes.
Slender, yeah. You can be beaten in 10 minutes.
Well, fuck you. I can't.
It can be beaten,
but it's...
And scary as shit on the way.
It gets to a point where the closer you are to beating it, the more he cheats. And, I don't know. I've only ever gotten up to about 6 nodes. Because of that... fucking bathroom. And anyone who's played it knows exactly what I'm talking about and also hates it as much as I do. Anyway, I digress.
Fair enough. So kick off with the news then, so Chad isn't afraid of that. And we'll start with the news because it's kind of a normal thing now, but it always sucks. Eurocom had to let go of some of their staff this week. I think they let go of something like 150 people.
That's a lot. And then begin another company to focus on mobile development.
Yeah. How about they take all the money they're giving Eurocom and just give it to THQ instead so we can actually get good games.
Get some good games.
Well, I like Eurocom as a developer. They made, I mean, I'm a huge fan of GoldenEye. We, Dead Space Extraction, I've heard good things about. So it's not like they were they've made some terrible games recently. I've already kind of shared my gripe with 007 Legends on this podcast before. But, I mean, part of that was also the fact that I think Activision gave them 9 months to make a game. You really can't do much in 9 months, as we've seen time and time again. But yeah, it always does suck to see a company go belly up. But at the same time,
I'm so over the idea of we have to gather together as a community and pour one out every time a developer lays off a bunch of people. Because it sucks that people are losing their jobs, but if they were making a quality product, they wouldn't be losing their jobs.
But I mean, there are people who have lost their jobs even after making quality projects. I mean, not to really rub it in, but we do have an award for best game that got you fired every year on our podcast, and that has included the people who've made L.A. Noire. I assume Kingdom of Amalur is up there as well this year. Blur was a good game and they got canned. So there are people who make quality games. It's either
it's tragic. Gather together and say, yeah, this totally sucks.
It's
but in a lot of
continually cases, screwing people over.
I think the bigger reason, at least for me, isn't so much any individual developers, but it does tend to look like a pattern after 3 or 4 years of this happening almost every week.
Yeah, it sucks. But it's also because I think the industry, there were a few years where it was really growing and booming, and now it's kind of on the back end.
But yes, I guess you can could kind of recap the Eurocom discussion, since I assume you two didn't really hear us that much. Chad was going to send you...
kept saying opinionated things and then not hearing responses.
Okay. Well, Chad was basically saying that, it sucks that people are losing their jobs, but if they were making quality products, it wouldn't be such a big deal. Notice he thinks that we should all mourn every time we end up using another developer, because it does happen often. Like I said, we've had maybe 20 stories like this year alone, and I'm probably underselling it.
There are cases where, people totally get fired even after doing a really good job on something, and that sucks, but, there's also a lot of cases when that doesn't happen.
The problem is it's not just a case of, you can just go and make a good game a lot of the time, because the companies that this happens to, they get screwed up. In this case, they had to make the game in 9 months, whereas most games take at least twice that. And, I think it's a very, very unhealthy relationship that publishers have with developers, in the sense that publishers just, they bark orders and, you couldn't do that even though it was not a really realistic proposition in the first place, so see ya.
The thing is, like I said, Daniel, I think Eurocom is one of those development houses that can put out good stuff given the time and money. I think they've shown this before. But of course, if you give them 9 months and probably a limited budget and say, hey, here, use the Call of Duty engine thing, go. Of course, it's not going to turn out great.
And the other thing is, quality games are one thing and they do go far. But the other thing is, a lot of these companies, the publishers aren't really behind them. With Eurocom, 007 Legends, I don't remember seeing any type of marketing for that game.
Yeah, not really.
And
no.
It was an easy market. There's a new James Bond film coming out. Tie it with that. Put a trailer in front of that. You should have had Skyfall in the title in some fashion, because that was awesome.
They could have advertised it before the movie started in the cinemas.
Don't be silly.
Why would you do that? People who go to movies don't buy video games.
Oh, wait. Before my James Bond presentation, I saw a Halo 4 trailer.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
I don't
even have the words to talk about how fucked up that is.
And a lot of people at the cinema were like, wow, this looks pretty cool. I think I will check this game. I actually heard that.
Believe it or not, I have seen Halo adverts in a cinema, and I wasn't even inside the cinema. I was in London, and I was standing on a bridge, and there was an IMAX in the distance, and I could see a Halo 4 ad on the window from the outside.
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, it's the same thing. Nintendo had an advertisement for the Wii U in front of Skyfall and in front of Wreck-It Ralph. And the certain movies, they had poster space as well. So it's not, you know, again, it's an audience that doesn't traditionally watch. Because I've had this project on the side, and I'm going to try to do it next year as a full thing. It's like, if you notice where marketing money goes for video games, it tends to go to the same niche, which is like that really like male-driven demographic. So you'll find it on like Comedy Central. You'll find it on like ESPN. Well, none of you would know what ESPN is.
I don't know ESPN.
Okay, I didn't. But yeah, you'll find it on Sports Channel.
Why would I not know what ESPN is? I probably watch more sports than you do, motherfucker.
Well, I didn't know if it was. I thought it was an American thing. I didn't know if it was an international channel.
No.
Oh, it is. But all of our good sports channels are American.
So yeah, you know, like, but then you look at people like Nintendo and. Even like Sky and His Giants, that's the type of stuff you see during Nickelodeon when you watch Ninja Turtles in the morning or when you watch the DC Nation and stuff like that. So it's, you know, like our advertising in front of movies is a big market, especially when you have a movie you can tie it into. Yeah.
I mean, I think I've talked to you after the show at one point. Right? When I said, like, I saw Looper, and in front of Looper, there was an ad for XCOM.
Yeah, you put it there, and it's like you have 007. James Bond is a brand that extends far beyond video games. As much as we have GoldenEye, James Bond has been around for 50 years. He's had a Blu-ray set. He's had a documentary this year. He's had a new movie. He's had several world premieres, and you couldn't think of any way to tie that into your game.
Apparently not, because they also struggle to tie the movie into their own game.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. but I was going to say, like, you can even advertise it with like 007 Legends for the exclusive Skyfall mission after the movie releases or something like that. But nothing. No commercials, no advertising. Like, there weren't even really reviews for it.
And there seems to be a big habit with Activision specifically. Like, they make a game that turns out to be okay sometimes, and maybe not in some others, and they just don't advertise it. It happened with GoldenEye, pretty much everything that Bizarre made since Activision bought them.
The Raven games.
Yeah.
But here's the thing with Activision, and this is what confuses me, is they'll spend money, and they'll spend a lot of money
They know how to advertise because they do it enough for Call of Duty. Why can't you leverage that for pretty much every other game you make?
But the thing is, I'm asking myself, does Call of Duty at this point even need this much?
Yeah, Call of Duty will sell itself.
Yeah, that's my point as well. It's like, they start advertising Call of Duty in May, usually, with the reveal trailer, usually during the NBA Finals. And then right now, they have three different Call of Duty commercials airing. They have the live-action one with all the celebrities. They have that really awful one with the 3D, where like the guy's like, do you guys have 3D? And then he kicks down the wall behind him, and it's like the battlefield opens up. And then they have like a Call of Duty Black Ops 2 commercial. Three different commercials. You usually see all three of them during a commercial break. And these aren't cheap, because it has Robert Downey Jr., it has like all these famous people in these commercials. They aren't cheap to make. They don't show the game at all, but they aren't cheap to make. At this point, it's just like, oh, a new Call of Duty is out. That's it. But, you know, if you take half of that budget and you put it towards like Skyend, that you put it towards Bond, you put it towards... Because how many games has Activision sent out to die this generation?
A lot. Wolfenstein, the
Singularity,
James Bond game, Singularity.
Singularity was so good, too.
Yeah.
Well, it was fun.
A lot.
Far too many. Anything that wasn't Guitar Hero or Call of Duty, pretty much.
And now Skylanders, which, if I'm not mistaken, they didn't really advertise the first Skylanders, but now that it's a success, you do see Skylanders Giants commercials everywhere.
It's kind of the wrong way around, right? They start advertising as soon as something is successful.
Yeah,
shouldn't
that's
it be? I don't know.
You advertise it so it becomes successful.
Yeah.
Like, I understand you want to advertise your new products as well and stuff like that, but yeah, it's really weird that they I mean, their budgets for Call of Duty marketing is probably bigger than most games.
Yeah.
And at this point, oh, you don't even need a fancy commercial. Just say Call of Duty Black Ops 2 in stores now. There, you're sold.
Maybe mention some pre-order bonus.
They have GameStop for that. And that's the other thing. A lot of these things are, because Call of Duty is the biggest brand in console gaming right now, a lot of the advertisement is done for them, either through word of mouth, through retail shops who are offering pre-order bonuses, midnight launches. It's, you know, Call of Duty's everywhere. So you don't need three different types of commercials. You don't need them every hour on the hour. But they continue to do it.
But let's be honest, it's not just Activision. I mean, EA has done the same with some of their titles, and it's a shame. Especially with the partner titles.
And even if you decide, like, you know, like movies, they have what they call a tempo film, which is like your big film for the year, and everything else you kind of put around it so that it makes the money. What video games should do, and it's kind of antiquated, but it should still work. It's like if you have a Call of Duty, put a demo of like the World 7 Engines, put a demo of Sky, put a demo of your other games with it, because then you know that you have 20 million people buying this game, so you have 20 million people.
Well, Valve did it, and look what Portal became.
That's a great example. They didn't know a way to sell.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's how Portal started.
Yeah. And it's a huge brand now. I mean, Portal 2 sold, 5 million copies or something like that?
Yeah.
So there are ways to do it. And it's not...
That's how Crackdown got started.
Yeah. Well, okay, that's...
Although that was the other way around.
Yeah, but...
I mean, that's another strategy. It works, though. I mean, imagine if Activision has a game that comes out in like June or July, and it's like exclusive Call of Duty beta access. You don't think that's going to help the game sell during the summer?
Oh, of course it's going to. People are just crazy for the multiplayer of Call of Duty, so of course a lot of people pick it up first taste.
I mean, how many people bought Crackdown because of the Halo 3 beta?
Everybody who bought Crackdown.
There are people.
Bought Crackdown because of Crackdown.
I'm half and half. I bought it because I like the idea of an open world game with like superhero powers, but I also bought it because you wanted early access to Halo 3 beta.
I didn't even use my Halo 3 beta.
It was half the reason why I bought Bulletstorm on day one.
What did Bulletstorm come with?
The Gears 3 beta.
The problem with that, at least to me, at that point, is that you realize that like all of these things, like usually it comes with it and you get first dibs, but sometimes you can get access to these betas before those
people. In that case, I was the last person I knew to get access to
I remember people saying that because that was like Microsoft was giving it away on their website and people got it. And it's like, you gotta wait until next Tuesday, Bulletstorm, to get your access to Gears of War 3 beta.
I hate Gears of War 3 beta because that's the game that killed my 360. That's funny.
Yes, it is.
It is.
I want to play Halo 4.
It's a really pretty looking game, too.
Buy a new 360.
I'm cheap.
You can range.
I need to buy figures. I can't afford consoles.
At least he knows where his priorities are.
What type of figures are you buying?
I know exactly what type of figures he's buying.
The ones with tits.
Well, presumably. You don't actually see them. Come on now. I'm a classy guy. Kind of.
Uh-huh. Anyhow... I guess since we're talking about...
Chat. Maybe buy one figure less, and it's probably enough to buy a 360. I know the prices of those things.
It's true. They're so fucking expensive. It's just fucking PVC, too. Jesus. Why? Why is it so expensive? I can go to the hardware store, buy PVC pipe for like 30 cents. I actually have an image that pertains to this. Give me a minute. Anyway,
While he's looking for his picture, I mean, since we're talking about marketing and publishing and all that other fun jazz, we might as well talk about Peter Molyneux and his breakdown this week. It all kind of
That was very strange. I was like, what? Even for Peter Molyneux, I was kind of confused about that.
Well, it's start off with, what was it, Curiosity, which I guess Curiosity killed the company in this case. But he once again kind of overpromised and underdelivered, and it didn't help that the servers were messing. I still don't get the point of Curiosity. I don't know what it was.
The point, this is it, right, is Curiosity is, to the player, to me or you, it's just a Skinner box. You tap, you get coins. I managed to sort of, after about 10 minutes of looking at it, obviously the faster and the more accurate you tap, the faster you get coins and the more coins you get. So it's just a Skinner box, essentially, in a almost a literal sense. It's a Skinner box. And obviously they're using it for some other purposes, because it sounds like it's a bit of a hassle for them to run. And maybe it's to see like how many people can affect one thing at one time. I don't know.
I think Curiosity is as interesting as playing with bubble wrap. So.
Because it's not a game. All it is a tool for them to see how people will do a certain thing.
Yeah.
Why?
But don't put that out. I don't know.
And he, so yeah, he was upset.
Don't hype it up then.
Wasn't it in an interview with RPS that he was really upset? And it's like,
he was on the
verge of this. So why? Because, like, shit goes wrong. You know, this happens no matter what you do. And, like, this is not something that's new to you, Peter Molyneux. You over-promise and under-deliver all the time. And it kind of led me to sort of think, why does he even say anything anymore? Because, like, him saying that him being on the verge of tears is even just more hubris, you know? Like, and that's what we don't like about Peter Molyneux, is just all the hubris that comes out of him. Surely
I
don't
like
just a, really? Like,
I enjoy that he's so theatrical about everything.
I've seen him talk in person. I think it's fascinating to listen to him. I'm always captivated, I have to say. When I've met the guy, he's super nice. And once he talks, you're just captivated by whatever he's talking about. I don't know what it is.
He fully believes everything he says.
Yeah.
Even if someone else believes it, he does.
And that's good, except at some point you have to deliver to these people, or you're the boy who cried.
And it's, yeah, and I don't, like, Peter Molyneux would just be better if he said nothing, because, like, it's just, like, everything that comes out of his mouth is just so over the top, and it's just like, I cannot take you seriously no matter what you say. He could say that grass was green and the sky was blue and I wouldn't fucking believe it at this point, you know?
But yeah, I mean, it is one of those things where, like, there are people, there are developers and I think publishers who have some type of crowd to the gaming community. Like, there's certain people, like, you hear stuff from them and you'll accept it. There are people who kind of over-exaggerate their roles and then you kind of don't. I mean, a good example of that, I think, is Warren Spector had a lot of goodwill towards him before the first Epic Mickey game, and I think that's kind of really diminished in the last 2 years between Epic Mickey and Epic Mickey 2.
Yeah, that's true.
And Peter Molyneux, on the other hand, has had a lot of goodwill because people want his games to be as good as he claims, but it's been a decade and we have yet to reach any of his potentials in his head.
And then he goes and launches a Kickstarter, which some people say that he could get money if he wanted to do, and I believe that, but that's not the problem I have with this Kickstarter. The problem I have is, one, it's going to be another avenue for him over-promising and under-delivering. They even take the piss out of it themselves in their pledge video, where he's talking about, oh, we could have 20 on 20, and then the guy who actually does the programming sits there going, no, it's going to be maximum 8 on 8.
No, it's just going to be 8.
Oh, well, there you go. You know? And it's just like, so you're just, it's just a joke to you now. And not only that, is Peter Molyneux is just doing what everybody else is doing on Kickstarter, which is not what Kickstarter was designed for, which is like, especially with video games, I don't know about anything else, but what people were doing is, I'm a big name person in the industry, you should support me, because what I'm doing is a game that's like that game you used to play 20 years ago, but it's new, and well, I'm putting new things in it.
I think it was the thing is, wait, let me answer
okay. to Daniel first. Because I've dealt with this stuff on Kickstarter as well, and I actually supported projects like that. The thing is, people like me actually want to play that stuff, and we know it is just a fact with that publishers, and there are not that many around anymore, like Activision, EA. You can forget THQ because we don't think it matter. Ubisoft, yes, those three. They are not going to publish an isometric 2D graphics party-based RPG.
But no, but Peter Molyneux became famous in the first place because Populous was new. Nobody had seen anything like it before. And now he's just like, oh yeah, I'm going to do a new Populous game.
He says he's going to do a new God game. And I would like to see a new God game. There has not been one around for a very long time, and I think Black and White was particularly lackluster, especially compared to something like Populous. So I would say what he's doing is totally all right, because no one else, there's no other way that anyone would fund it, and I...
Peter Molyneux is getting funding on name alone. All he did is say... Peter Molyneux, Populous, and then people just started giving money. That's all they needed to do.
That is people's money to do what they see fit. What is crowdfunding? Like, do we use it for big name? If Steven Spielberg came and said, I need to fund a new movie, do you give him money over an indie filmmaker because he has, he can make a good film? And it's the same thing here. It's like, it's people's money to decide to do what they want to do. If it's right for him to use such an avenue to get money when he could have asked around and maybe found a smaller publisher who would do it. Or even do it as an indie publisher. He could put it on Steam or...
And you know what? Given Peter Molyneux's history, I wouldn't be surprised if this new God game gets to go ahead and it's fantastic and it's great and everybody on the planet loves it. Right, and then what will happen is, well, we've already got EA and Microsoft ticked off the list, so let's say Activision comes off and buys the company, and then they highly revere Peter Molyneux and they make a new franchise, make a few games in it, and then he'll just leave and just go, oh yeah, I'm sick of all the bureaucracy with publishers. And it's just an endless loop. Peter Molyneux just does the same things in cycles, whether it be over hyping and under delivering, or starting a new company because he wants to be independent, getting bought out, and then starting a new company because he wants to be independent again. It's just like, how many times are people going to fall for the same tricks?
Well, as many times as he can allow them to fall for it, and that's, it's one of those things. Again, if people are willing to do it, it's not necessarily a bad thing for them to do it. I think at some point that should start with Kickstarter itself and saying, like, what, this project may be too mainstream for us. But to them, they're also a tiny company, and the stuff like Tim Schafer brought a lot of attention to that site, so they probably really enjoy these projects because it does bring more people to the site, and maybe they'll fund other smaller projects that they see on the website.
Exactly. And the thing I want to say about this whole thing, it kind of was a two-way discussion. One discussion is about, is this a thing that should be on Kickstarter, which I think it should be. And the other discussion is, it's Peter Molyneux, should we support him anymore?
No.
And I think you're right, we shouldn't.
Because what's happening is because we keep buying his games, right, we're just encouraging all of this over-promising stuff. If Peter Molyneux was to not get his funding, right, he might actually sit down and go, oh, maybe I'm actually going to have to be realistic about something at some point in my life.
And that's why I agree with you. And that's why, as much as I would like a new God game...
There's a game called Maya on Kickstarter. It's like a few days left until it's finished funding. Go and put money into that. Because at least it's a guy who's doing it on his own, and he can't overpromise things because he doesn't really have anything to promise. you know. And it sounds like, from what I've read with his interviews with RPS and stuff, he knows what he's talking about.
So what I want to say is, because Peter Morley is someone who has overpromised and underdelivered in the past, I'm like, no, I'm not giving you money up front. It's just not a safe bet compared to other big name guys like Double Fine, who where I can be pretty sure that the end result will be something I enjoy.
Yes.
Because they have been pretty realistic about what they're going to do, and they have been so in the past.
And who doesn't love Tim Schafer?
Also, and I could be has Peter Molyneux ever come in on time and on the budget for any of his games?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe in his early days, but not in a long time. I think don't think since Black and White.
Yeah, that's to say, because that's another thing. It's like you want some. I mean, like for, as far as I know, Double Fine's pretty decent at releasing the games, and they, you know, within a window. Where like, I mean, Fable takes its sweet time, and we saw nothing of Mayo after its initial reveal and all that other stuff. So you can fund this project, and then it never gets made, which is a terrible thing with Kickstarter. I think that happened recently, where a project just wasn't funded, and you don't get a refund for that, do you?
If a project's not funded, you don't pay anything. But
well, if it's not completed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they have any obligation to refund.
Nope.
So, yeah, you know, dems the breaks. This one is just weird because I don't know when karaoke on video games became a big thing. But I think it was Microsoft. I don't know if it was a company within, but announced a karaoke service on Xbox Live.
Yeah, it's Microsoft because of the stupid monetary model that I don't want to have anything to do with.
I was going to say, it's similar to the model that Nintendo has set up in Japan, where you don't pay for the karaoke service itself, but you pay per hour to download songs.
Is it bad that I actually think this model is great?
I think it works for karaoke.
It's probably a good idea for karaoke, but I can see Microsoft trying to do it with other things.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. I think with karaoke, well, it's great.
Because karaoke means you just do what you love, and you know maybe it just takes Microsoft points out of your account based on how much time you spend.
Yeah, I can pay for an hour or two and have fun at a gathering with karaoke, and we can basically sing whatever song.
It definitely
you
makes
want.
More sense than paying per song or paying per month. Because
exactly.
You can have parties, just chuck a few bucks at it, you know,
and
have the night done.
And it makes even more sense than buying a $60 product,
yeah.
Because I know that's a game that I would, I don't know, use twice a year?
Yeah.
Maybe? So paying for an hour is
But I can see Microsoft
great.
Like expanding this out into traditional games, and if they do, I don't want anything to do with it.
I can see like paying for time online being a thing in the future for certain games. Like you want to play Call of Duty, you know, you can pay $10 like the first 10 levels or something like that. But I hope it's karaoke. It makes sense. But I think it would make sense from any type of musical game. Or any type of game where it's kind of like I'm only going to pay maybe Christmas and Thanksgiving with the family.
Yeah.
Honestly speaking, and this is why karaoke games are confusing to me. The only time I ever do karaoke is when I'm drunk with friends and we're out. It's not something I've ever said like, oh man, I wish I had a karaoke game right now.
Yeah, but, I don't know. And there are some people out there that just enjoy karaoke anyway, so.
Yeah, but I don't know many people who do it sober, even when I go out.
I know people that do it sober. How about that? I know people that do it sober.
And those are people that can sing, aren't they?
They're not.
Oh, well then.
They're not.
Like, I have no problem randomly singing, but I won't actually like sit here and perform a song for people in my living room just because there's a lot of alcohol involved.
Somehow that's something I've never done, surprisingly.
Drunk karaoke's awesome.
Yeah, you'd really think I would have gotten around to it, but no.
Yeah.
It's anime this year, that's the plan. We're going to get drunk and sing Only My Railgun.
Okay.
That'd be great.
And finally, we have... Anthony's not around this week either, so we can't really talk about the Wii U's itself, but as with any launch...
What are you talking about? This is the internet. We don't need informed opinions. We can just talk about it.
The Wii U's not next gen! What are you talking about? We can't even talk about it! It's not even
you
relevant!
Know, one of these days, people are going to think that I'm actually serious about all the shit I'm talking about the Wii U, and I'm going to get death threats.
But
because Nintendo
yeah.
fans are crazy people.
Yeah, they are.
So long as it's on next gen, Chad, you'll be alright. It's okay.
But to be fair, all fans are crazy. and you see it on Gaff all the time. Oh, Sony fans are so crazy. Nintendo fans are so crazy. Microsoft fans are so crazy. People in general are crazy if they're in a fandom. There's a reason they are in that fandom. But yes, people
more like
are
fan dumb.
But, yeah.
Hey,
in the sense of a word, we know it all.
But yes, Nintendo has several questionable decisions with the design, and that's Nintendo. But there are, you know, just some ones that stick out. Show OS is a big one from what I hear.
I think the design of the whole interface seems kind of bad and just very sluggish. It's what I have seen.
I don't mind the design itself. I think it's nice and simple. I do have issues when it takes 30 seconds to go into like your home screen or 30 seconds to try out the Mii first and stuff like that. That adds up. I mean, I've said it before. I'm a huge fan. I hate load times in games.
Yeah, and they have even load times just to get into the system settings. That's kind
yeah,
of
and
unheard
that,
of.
That's just going to encourage me not to do anything because I don't want to waste that 30 seconds. It's the same thing I used to do with when wrestling games switched over to the 360 and the PS3. You'd create a character, and every time you'd add something to check it out, it would be like a 10-second load time. That just meant I didn't check out anything because I didn't want to wait every time to see them change it and load it. And that, you know, it's the same thing. If your OS is slow, it's going to be a pain in the ass. I hope that with over time, that's something that's optimized to just be quicker.
You would hope so.
It's really odd coming from Nintendo, who have always been a stickler for load times. These are the people who made mini discs for the GameCube because it made loading faster.
True.
And stuck with cartridges for the N64 because they didn't want CD load times.
Mm.
And to make a Surface OS just seems so anti them.
And it's not just the OS, all of the loading times just seem kind of excessive compared to the other consoles, I think.
Yeah. Which is weird.
Shouldn't they have, like, a faster drive than the PS3, for example, at this point?
They do have a faster drive, yeah. So I assume part of it is just, you know, like, just, like, from what I understand, a lot of this stuff wasn't really finalized until it was, like, final. So a lot of this stuff is probably unoptimized code as well. Because, I mean, they probably had, like, 2 months to kind of finalize the games and print them. So, I mean, some of these things are hard to say at launch as opposed to, like, if this is still a problem, like, you know, next March or something like that, then, you know, it's an issue. But right now, it's, you know, part of it can just be chalked up to being unfamiliar. I mean, Nintendo developed games is really odd for that because they've had the technology since day one. But out of third-party games, you know, you show frame rates, show loading times and stuff like that. It's just, I assume, an unfamiliarity with the console and its hardware design. And in fact, Nintendo isn't always forthcoming with these details.
Hmm.
I mean, even some of the stuff is still kind of half-baked. We don't have any of the NFC functionality, which was one of their big things at the start of the year. Nintendo TV still isn't officially out until next month, and even though most of the services are there. I've heard the YouTube app is awful. Which, in my experience, isn't that surprising, because YouTube apps in general suck. Even on my tablet and my phone, I just prefer to use it in the web browser.
Yeah.
I actually have...
But saying that, the user website sucks as well, so...
I actually use a pretty decent YouTube app for iOS, but at least for the iPad, but it's not the official one.
Yeah, that's probably not the... But yeah, the actual YouTube... I don't know what it is, because it's Google. They know how to make apps.
They should know.
What else is there? The fact that your saves and your downloads are still tied to your hardware, even with an account system.
Yeah,
that's a backwards way of thinking about things, isn't it? Like,
that's the weirdest
thing. It sucks. It's dumb. It just find me one person that thinks that was a good idea outside of Nintendo, because obviously a fuck ton of people inside Nintendo think it's a good idea.
I don't understand the thinking. I understand tying like your purchases to your account, just you know, so people, you know, I'm sure you folks did this with the PS3 as well. It's like at some point when PlayStation didn't really have that system in place where they do now, it's like I would share my account and I have other people's account, and then we just kind of traded games, because as long as that account was on your PS3, you got to play those games.
Well, up to 5.
And it was 7. Okay.
That's the way they got around the problem that Nintendo's having, where, oh shit, my console broke.
Yeah.
Yes, I lost everything I have.
Well, the thing is, with Nintendo, you probably will get the stuff. It's just a rogue, because you'd probably have to call them and they'll have to verify. It's just too much work for you to say, I want to get a new system. I just want my stuff.
But on the other hand, you can't even recover your Nintendo ID, your name online, because even that is tied to the console.
Again, I assume that's something that they will do. Because, I mean, it's the same way that if your Wii gets bricked, they will transfer everything from your Wii to your...
Yeah, but they should have learned. It's dumb. That's not what a count is for. Every sane person has this expectation. When I have a count for something, I could probably use and all the other devices and get all my stuff. I have an Apple ID.
Yeah.
I can use my Apple ID on my Mac, my iPhone, my iPad. I can all get all my shit. I can use my 360 ID on Windows. I can use it in my 360, and I can use it on a different 360, and I can get all my shit. I can do the same with my PS3. Why does Nintendo not get this?
The whole point of an account is portability. Like, the reason why you have an account instead of just a system is so it can be portable, so you can take it from one system to another. Fuck, it's annoying.
Yeah. It's a very backwards design. To me, it just seems like one of those things where they're just like, we don't want people to find a workaround so they can have multiple copies of all games on it.
Except
or
for
whatever.
Some
and I,
of
you know,
Microsoft it, have done that for an entire generation. There's no excuse.
Yeah, I don't
and
don't
other
get
software
it.
Companies are doing as well. I mean, Google, Apple, you name it.
By all means, tie it because your PSN account, your PSN purchases, and your Xbox Live purchases, and somewhat your Steam purchases are tied to your hardware, but they're also tied to your account as well. So if you do use your account on some other hardware, so long as it's connected to the internet, you can use it.
Yeah, that's fine. Fine solution that would work, but
it seems like they're planning on expanding your account to be able to use it for different stuff, but it's still kind of weird that you can't, it's not tied to your game purchases, I thought it was weird with the Wii and the 3DS as well, because you can link your Club Nintendo accounts with those things, so it's not like Nintendo doesn't have a track of what you're purchasing. They're actually pretty good with that, because they'll even give you like surveys and stuff when you play new games on your Club Nintendo account. It's just like they have this really, really backwards way of thinking about
it.
And
actually, you just mentioned the Club Nintendo. I mean, they have the solution right at their hand. Say, register your Club Nintendo account with your Wii U, and your Club Nintendo account will register all your purchases. What's so hard about that? I can't think that a big company like Nintendo can't find a solution like that.
I don't think it's a lack of trying to find a solution. I just think they think this is a bigger problem to them than anybody else does for some strange reason. I'm still not 100% sure why, but I mean they have to. I mean it's not just the competitors in the console space. It's like every other software company in the world has a solution to this, and you couldn't find some way to make it work for yours. It's not that antiquated.
Yeah.
What else do they have? Some of the other problems I think are just, you know, it's fair.
Games at this point are kind of not good.
Well, like I said before, it happens with ports in general. It's what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, 360 had some iffy games, PS3 had iffy games, 3DS had iffy games, PS Vita had iffy games. I think part of the problems people have with the system is it's been a long time since we've had a console launch, so you don't remember. Like, everything's kind of seen through rose-tinted glasses now. Like, everything is perfect.
Well,
at launch.
On the other hand, it's like people at least expected it to be somewhat more powerful than the current generation, and that's why people also thought, like, well, at least they should run as well, I guess.
And that's a fair expectation, but at the same time, it's still going back to people are just running this stuff, and a lot of the times, they aren't the company. Like, as far as I know, a lot of the games that have problems aren't actually being ported by the teams.
Yeah,
a lot
of them are different teams, yeah.
So, I mean, it's people earning new hardware. It's people porting somebody else's game, so they have to get that. And then there's also the stuff with the controller. A lot of the times, it's something new in general. Yeah. But yeah, if this problem continues to persist, you know, like that. Yeah, I mean, what works for me is a lot of the software that's being made from the ground up for the Wii, like Zombie U, Nintendo N, New Super Mario Bros. U, doesn't seem to be exhibiting those same problems. Even some of the games that were made at the same time, like I've heard. Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transform works best on the Wii U.
Hmm.
So stuff like that, if it's just like you got in time to get the hardware and stuff like that, that's understandable. If you're given
I think just something that adds up to all the other problems people are having, and I think it's worth mentioning. If one of our listeners is going to pick up a Wii U, it's probably not a good idea to pick up any of the ports.
I mean, we've said this from the start. It's like you don't buy. Personally speaking, I wouldn't buy a Wii U for these ports. I mean, one, half of them you can already get on other systems and probably cheaper at this point. And the other thing is, it's not like there's really no reason to pick up the Wii U version over the other ones as of right now.
Yep.
I mean, again, if you look at something like Tekken where you have the characters, you know, the costumes and the extra mode, that's probably a reason.
It's huge, but on the other hand, if you are someone who enjoys playing online these games, it's really not a good idea to pick the Wii U version because the install base is just not there.
Not there. And I think that's something. That's another thing that I thought was wrong this week. I understand it's a launch week, the system's new, but you know, like, there were stories comparing the fact that Call of Duty had like 500.
Yeah, that was just stupid. Of course it's going to have failless people.
Yeah, it's a launch week. It's only in one territory. You're comparing it to a global launch 2 weeks beforehand. And it's a franchise that has very engrossed in the 360s. Atmosphere. So there's really no, like, there was no reason whatsoever for to pick up the Wii U version, especially after the 360 version. So it seemed like really one of those odd things to complain about. Like, I understand it's not, and that is a huge point right now, and that was a point people said before the system came out, is like, it's going to take a lot of work for them to kind of take people away from Xbox Live and PSN. It may not be something they are able to do. And having it be ports of games that people can already get on the systems they already own with friends they already play with isn't going to be the best way to compare it. I mean, I think here the litmus is on Nintendo for not having any exclusive online games at launch.
But then Nintendo doesn't really do online games at all, so.
But if you want that audience, you're going to have to do something. And it's not going to be Smash Bros. A year and a half from now. It's not going to be Mario Kart 3
At this point, Nintendo has to compete in that space. And if they don't, they're in trouble.
I don't know. I agree that they need to be more aggressive in that space. I don't necessarily think they need to compete in that space to be. Because Nintendo's strength, and I think it works much better for them, is in the local co-op, in the local play, because it's much easier for them to get those kids and those families, because they tend to be people who live together anyhow. Like, where we range is like, we're the 18 to 34 year old males who tend to live on their own and stuff like that. You know, you move out of your house, you aren't married yet or anything like that. And those are the type of people, you don't have friends over every weekend to play a video game. And if you do, again, it's usually involving drinking. So video games isn't your first priority. So for us, it's like online is a very big part. But when you go further and you have kids and you want to play with them, I think it's not as big of a deal for them. But it's that core market that Nintendo seems to always miss out on, that 18 to 34-year-old males and stuff. And they need to focus on that. And what they need to do is, at this point, none of their classic IPs are going to really cater to them, even if you put it online and stuff like that. It would help to build an online user base, but you aren't going to convince people with Mario Kart, you aren't going to convince people with Smash Brothers if they aren't already convinced by that. So what they need is either to fund an exclusive online title,
which might be something Retro is working on. Who knows?
Yeah, that could be something Retro's working on. The other thing would be to get it out there and let people know it's coming.
Yeah.
Because, and this happens with launch, and, you know, it's like the Wii U launch, and then there's really nothing else for the rest of the year for them.
Mm. On the other hand, something that I would love to see, but I know we are a small fan base, is an F-Zero game with online. That would be kind
this
of cool.
Is what I said, this is what I said a while ago, that Retro should do is an F-Zero game, because it would first of all show you how good the games can look on the system. Second of all, you can have a really good online mode for it, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, and I hate saying this, it always sounds snobby, I would not waste Retro's time with this. Honestly speaking, if I was Nintendo, I would go with Monster Games. They seem to be their go-to developers for racing games. They've done the ExciteBots, ExciteTruck, they've done Pilot Wings.
Well, it doesn't really matter who makes it. If they can make good games, they should do an F-Zero game for Wii U, because and it's a franchise that we haven't really seen much of lately, so...
Yeah, I've said it before, I think F-Zero is one of those, especially being that you can do like 32 players online and something.
Yeah.
It's a genre that's not really very, like you don't want to enter the first person shooter market right now, because there's a lot of competition there. But there aren't many F-Zero games out on the market. There's Wipeout.
Yep.
And they've shown that they can do racing games online. They've done ExciteBots, they've done Mario Kart three times now actually. They've done ExciteBots on the Wii and stuff like that, so they can do that. And again, it's a nice game. It's a type of franchise that appeals to, you know, like you don't have that problem most Nintendo franchises have, where they have a, let's say a, I hate using this term, but they have a kiddie character in the spotlight.
Yeah.
F-Zero doesn't really have a character, even though, you know, Captain Falcon's kind of become It's cars. You don't really care about what the characters.
And it actually is still a kind of game that can still appeal to a broader audience. I mean, it's a racing game after all. So even if you're young or older, it still works, I think.
Yeah, the problem with that though is F-Zero is supposed to be tough as nails.
Yeah.
And
true.
I think if you dumb it down, people complain.
And
you know,
when I was 6 years old, I played F-Zero. Whatever.
Yeah, but you're very different.
What?
Yeah, but with something like a racing game, it would be quite easy to have, like, the accessibility and make it hard at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Mario Kart seems to do that. I know people aren't going to say Mario Kart's difficult, but I think Mario Kart has, you know, it benefits you if you're a skilled driver, but it also allows you to...
Yeah, but or you could just say, have you played an F-Zero game before? What mode do you want?
But that's for offline. For online, how would you do
it? Ooh, I don't know. It'd have to be based on certain rule sets. I don't know.
You could do it like the CC classes, Mario Kart, for example. Have like a multiplayer game, and then you have like pick a CC class.
Even Mario Kart cheats in that, because it just makes it the middle one online. But yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. Like, instead of, you know, like how Halo has players, you can have, like, here's, like, a rookie cup, here's, like, a novice cup, here's, like, a expert cup, an amateur cup. The problem is you'll probably find people who jump in and out of them just to feel better about themselves. Or maybe they can do like Halo and just have, like, the, you know, like, 1 through 10 is, like, novice, 10, 11 through 20 is, like, you know, rookie.
Introduce a leveling system for the players.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If they did it, I mean, then again, you become Call of Duty at that point. But I don't
have a Call of Duty, the Call of Duty racing game. Why should Nintendo do that?
Oh, don't even say those words, because you know Activision's fucking thinking it.
I was about to say, Activision's already done it. They've done Blur, which is a Call of Duty racing game. You level up your characters, and you get perks based on
the
level and stuff like that.
The game was actually really fun.
Yeah, it was great.
It was good, it just didn't sell that well.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And as far as I know, they don't have any online titles set for the immediate future, which is odd, because they have a lot of co-op games. They have Mario, they have Nintendo Land, which I think would have benefited greatly from online. They have Pikmin, which, as far as I know, has 4-player co-op. They have The Wonderful 101, which has 4-player co-op. So yeah, they have all these games, and like none of them. I mean, they introduced the Miiverse, which, from what I understand, from what I've seen, it looks like it's an interesting thing for a lot of people. I don't know if it's going to have a shelf last the entire generation, but it seems to be starting well.
If they wanted to last, they need to hurry up with their mobile apps.
That's probably
That's going to be interesting when that happens. And, you know, I'm sure somebody's going to find a way to integrate it with, like, Twitter and Facebook, because God knows we need more apps that post via Twitter and Facebook automatically. So, yeah, there's that. And there's, you know, software issue, hardware issues, a lot of stupid design issues with Nintendo and just, like, how they set up audio and visuals and stuff like that. But it seems that a lot of people are enjoying the system, so that's always good. I mean, at the end of the day, as much as these problems suck, it's always going to come down to the software library, and right now I think it's a decent enough library to get them through the holiday season. If they can keep up the momentum into the new year, it's going to be a whole different ball game.
We've got Colonial Marines.
That will be an interesting title to see. But on the other hand, I don't know when Gearbox... Wait, it's not even Gearbox porting, it's another studio again. So, I don't know. And then the question is as well, when did they get the dev kit, stuff like that? Might still be too early. I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of those... Again, it's going to rest on Nintendo, and I think Nintendo's had a decent lineup this launch, but they don't have anything that will be... they don't have anything that's really what you would say a system showcase. Like, Nintendo, yeah, it looks like it has good lighting and stuff, but it's not something that's like, oh my gosh, this is next gen. And 2D Mario is 2D Mario, especially since most people hate the art style. And Sing Party is, I honestly don't know.
And Zombie U is seemingly a decent game, but it's not really a looker, to be honest.
Zombie U is pretty much what you expect from a launch game, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Wii U is condemned.
Kind of.
But, I mean, part of with Zombie U, and again, you know, this is something I'll excuse it next year when we get the PS4 and the 362 or whatever, is that part of it is the technology, but part of it is also just kind of get its control, because Zombie U is one of the few games that uses the controller at all times for something different than what you've seen on the screen. So I assume it's a back and forth between getting those two things worked out as well. Again, if these things can persist, it is going to be a rough generation for Nintendo, especially when the other two come out. But, I mean, it's hard to say, like, bad ports are a showcase of a system. Because, I mean, how many bad ports does the PS3 get a year?
Well, that's a launch system syndrome. Like, you're always going to have terrible ports.
Yeah, but the PS3, again, is a system that still gets bad ports. And then you're not going to say it's because the PS3 is a bad system.
Well,
it could be a poorly designed system. But on all accounts, it's a much stronger system than the 360. It's just that people either don't spend the time or people don't have the experience to optimize it for that system. And the 360 remains the excuse for a lot of games because it's a system that more people buy games for.
Well, yeah. And it helps that the way they designed it is so it's basically a PC.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft isn't a stupid company. They may be lazy for the past 2 years as far as consoles go, but they aren't stupid.
But the Wii U is the thing. The launch, after all, I think has been kind of lackluster. At least my excitement for the console really died down. And now I'm really just in wait and see mode. Let's see how this develops.
Wait for Bayonetta 2.
I'm actually with you because part of it's just hanging out with Gaff and the online community. Just tends to be cynical and negative. But just like this past week, it's like every other story that's coming out about the system's like, oh gosh, I can't believe they did this. Oh, why is this happening? Yeah. Oh, this is just a terrible decision. And, you know, it's like something, and I'll be happy to finally get out the launch window. One is I hate the fact that half the Gaff threads are about the Wii U in some fashion.
Dude, have you heard the disc is rounded at the edges?
And it has like a hole in the middle?
And that's not even the worst one. Like, a lot of the times, it's like, there were people predicting, like, what's next for the Wii U? Is the Wii U doomed? Like, 2 days after it comes out, I'm like, give the system some time to breathe.
Wii U has no games. Just like the new best smell for a console. It's got no games.
Which I Which I hate. I always think it's a terrible thing because, literally speaking, no system launches without any games. What you want to say is the system either has no mass market games or no carrier apps. To say a system has no games is an easy rebuttal to say, yes, it does. You get any PlayStation Vita thread and you'll see people post, like, the 15 games that's come off of the system this year that says it has games. But what people want to say is, like, it doesn't have any games that appeal to me, or it doesn't have any games that appeal to me.
Oh, but does the Wii U have an Uncharted card game?
Oh, we did not talk about that, did we?
I don't know. Do we have to?
Yeah, we do, because it is a thing that is real.
It was an announcement this week.
Okay, let's talk about it real quick.
I mean, that's pretty much all the attention it gets. Okay, one is, like, it was really confusing because I don't know if you folks follow Will J. Powers. He used to be Sony's mark. He won Tester or whatever.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And
Did I tell you I got recruited to be on that once?
Yeah. E3 2010, yeah. I think. Yeah. But, yeah, he was... Because basically how it is it's... Part of it, it's partially DLC for Golden Abyss, but it's also a standalone thing. So he was saying that it's just DLC for Golden Abyss, but Sony is selling it as a new product. I mean, granted, it's only like $5, I think.
True.
But, I mean, honestly speaking, how many people, when they played Uncharted, were like, I needed a card game for this?
No one.
I wonder if it was the same guy that came up with it, as that Metal Gear Solid game, that card game. Metal Gear Acid, was it?
That wasn't the card game.
Oh, was it not?
It was partly used the card system, but it was still a turn-based strategy game.
Oh,
and
right.
Part.
So at least there is a game behind it. Then.
Yeah,
and I mean, I think there's other Sony. I think God of War made more sense as a card game because you have all the, you know, creatures and gods and stuff from mythology to use, but. It's like a very stupid concept for a card game.
The thing is, it's a collectible card game as well. It's a collectible card game where they will offer new DLC, which is basically new card packs. And it's $5 for the base game. Who knows how much the DLC will be? And I can get the same thing for free on my iPhone. So I don't know who's this going to sell a Vita to.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to start a feed to anybody.
Yeah. So why doesn't
there's anything else?
Well, no, did you not hear that the Vita is ready to steamroll the competition in the handheld space, according to Forbes?
to Forbes private marketer, or however this bullshit is called, I don't know.
But just going back to this real quick, I mean, it's one of those things where I think Sony's just trying to leverage the Uncharted IP. I don't think the Uncharted IP is there yet.
Yeah.
Like, even Nintendo waited a couple years before they started throwing out Mario everything.
A couple?
And
stay like a decade or more.
Yeah, I mean, like, Mario Kart would have been the first major one, and that was, what, 8 years after the original Super Mario Brothers game? We are, what is this, Uncharted has been out for 5 years now?
First one came out
2007.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've had a card game. He's in a Broya. I'm surprised he hasn't really cameoed in any. He's in a Big Planet, but that's different. But yeah, a card game, and the fact that Golden Abyss, while it was received well critically, hasn't done much commercially. It's just like you're going to exhaust the IP before you. And I think it's one of the stronger IPs going into next gen. And I think you need to do that and don't kind of. Fans can only have so much goodwill for a brand before they get tired of it. Sonic has existed on goodwill for about a decade and a half now, but Sonic also built that up over a decade.
On the other hand, I think a collectible card game on Vita probably has potential, but I think they could have
tried one though. No,
have done it in a different way. First of all, don't use Uncharted, and I would probably go with the free to play model.
They could
like
have
that.
Just slapped Magic the Gathering on it.
The other thing, and this is more of a personal taste, but as far as card games go, I would have preferred if you actually got cards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, then you can actually, like, it's...
You can buy cards and then use the camera to scan in a code so you get it in the game, and you can also play with real cards. That would be cool, I guess.
It wasn't a huge market, but people Kid Icarus earlier this year, and it had the AR card stuff. And the AR cards didn't really do much. You could put them on the screen and they'd fight each other. But it was something
You buy the small soft toys, and you scan the code on the tag into the game, and then you get them get the animal in the game.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest example would be Skylanders, of course. I think because it's a mental thing for me personally, but I think there's just something more appealing about getting a physical counterpart to DLC that would make me more likely to buy it. Especially when it's a card game, and traditionally card games have been played with physical cards.
Yeah. It would make sense. If you have your friends over, you can play with the real cards. If you're on the go, you can, I don't know, play it online or against the AI.
Speaking of, Sony has a card brand. They have Eye of Judgment.
True! I actually played Eye of Judgment.
So Sony could have made a card game on their card game IP for the Vita.
Yeah,
I think Sony forgot about Eye of Judgment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably true, but it still would have made... I think Eye of Judgment, it's one of those games I think make more sense as a handheld title.
Can I just say Eye of Judgment was actually kind of fun? I liked it.
Yeah,
but
you can say
moving
that.
On...
I don't buy it,
It was fun. Had a cool online mode and stuff. Whatever.
Yeah, and again, you can average that brand. It's a niche brand, but it's something that you can build up on the handheld space. And I think card games and those type of simple pick-up-and-play games work better. Charge $10 for the entry price and sell physical cards for people. Have them scan it in with the Vita's camera, and you're good to go.
True.
But, it is what it is. Uncharted, I mean, I guess Sony needed something, and Uncharted's here. It's out in, I think, 2 weeks. So, there you go. If you have a PlayStation Vita, which you should
have. And if you don't, you now have a reason to get one.
After those amazing deals on Black Friday, which was really sad that even Amazon couldn't sell the deal they were selling.
Like I said, I almost bought one yesterday. I just was too late because... I have PlayStation Plus, I have PlayStation All-Stars, and now between those things, I now own 5 Vita games, but not the system.
Yeah, and you would have gotten a lot more, I think the Amazon deal was $170? $180.
Yeah, the one in Germany was €150 with 2 games.
That's even better.
It's $180 for the Vita. You get a 4 gig memory card. You get Assassin's Creed Liberation. You get PlayStation All Stars Battle Royale. You get, I think it was a 3 month subscription to PlayStation Plus, and then you got like a $10 off Assassin's Creed 3 coupon. So it was something like $130 value.
And those and things they still sold out amazingly fast.
But the bundle didn't finish, it actually just ended.
Oh, I mean, here in Germany, the thing just sold out amazingly fast.
Yeah, and the problem
shows
is, like, if
the thing, if Sony, I don't know if they can, is the thing, if they would price it at the 3DS level, they might do better.
Yeah. I was about to say, the problem with that is, like, see how much of a discount they'd have to drop to the same price. 3DS.
Yep.
And people want them to offer a free game as well. And at that point, it's like they can't sustain that profit.
I think just lowering it to the 3DS pricing would probably be enough because they could probably throw in like 3 months of PlayStation Plus. After that, people would probably buy it themselves. I think that might work.
Anyway, I haven't paid attention. Has it?
It does amazing in Japan, and it does decently in the West. Yeah, I remember, and people post, because, you know, Gaff has all their Vita's Doom threads or whatever, but I remember posting when Sony announced the price for the Vita at E3 2010, like, Sony smoke blood in the water, and they're going after it.
Yeah, and at that point, everyone was expecting that, because it was priced at the same level as the 3DS.
Yeah, and the 3DS was doing so. You know, people did not expect Nintendo to be so drastic with what they were going to do in the future.
And then, $80 price cut. Boom. There you go. It wasn't
20 free games if you had the system already, and then they played the Mario Kart, and they played the Mario Kart again, and they played the Mario Kart again, and they played the Mario Kart again. I have Mario for 5 Mario games in a calendar year. It's insane for one system. And that's not even counting what they, the new Super Mario Brothers U for the Wii U. And it's just like, yes, they're all different games, but really, you could have spaced those out a bit.
Anyway, it seems to at least work for the 3DS. I mean, like I said, it's doing decent in the West and very well in Japan. It's incredibly well in Japan. I mean, have you seen the latest numbers where it was like, if you compared 3DS to Vita, it was like the sales were like 47-1?
Yeah, that was a bad week for the Vita. And that was just off the back of Animal Crossing. I can't imagine what's going to happen with Monster Hunter 4's release next year.
Madness will happen. Madness.
Yeah. It's getting to the point, and you can end on here, because you don't need to be on the Vita every week. It's getting to the point, though, where I believe the Vita is running neck and neck with the 3DS XL as far as sales go. And the 3DS XL may outsell it by the end of the year.
And the thing is, Sony should at this point be in panic mode for the Vita. I mean, the thing is selling worse than the Dreamcast. My fucking god, the Dreamcast survived long. The Dreamcast didn't survive long. It was like, I don't know, what was it, 2 years before Sega said discontinuing the system? At some point, you reach the point of no return. And then the thing is finished.
Yeah, and the thing is, and I think, you know, Sony is like, you know, it's selling to our expectations, we have no problem. The thing is, Sony fans are also not expecting anything of them. You know, every time somebody brings up that Sony needs to, oh, Vita's doing fine, it has a ton of great games, people just need to give it time. It's like, it's the same way that people say, like, when the successors to the 360 and the PS3 come out, Nintendo Wii U is kind of doomed. Vita's in the same position, because once you don't have parity with the current gen systems, people aren't going to waste time porting those 360 and PS3 versions of games to the Vita, because they've moved on. So Sony needs to kind of start building developer trust and relationships so that they start making games to the Vita. Because if you don't have those kinds of support from, you're not getting ports from the 3DS, where are you getting games from?
Yeah, and like I said, that will be the point of no return, and then this thing is finished.
I honestly think this Christmas might be the point of no return. If Assassin's Creed Liberations and Call of Duty Declassified don't do well, because those are two, if not the two biggest third-party franchises in gaming right now.
Personally, I would say early next year, because maybe they will still try something. We will see. But I think it's a shame. I think it's a cool system.
But the old adage is, when
there's nothing to play.
Yeah, the old adage is software sells hardware, and a lot of people always seem to be it's the hardware that sells the software, and that isn't true. That has never been true. But people can, because I always see this, and this always confuses me, is when people say it deserves to sell better. A system doesn't deserve anything. It's what it's earned. It's what people see in value. People see nothing of value in a $250 Vita. If it was $100 and they had those same games, maybe people would see value in it. It's the same way that people like Martin and myself don't really see value in a $350 Wii U at this point. If it was $300, $250, maybe.
Judging by how easy it sounds like it was to walk in the day after launch and buy one, I'd say a lot of people probably share that opinion about the Wii U.
I'm going to hold off judgment until we see sales numbers, because I don't know if you were around GAF during the early start of the
next gen. I have been on GAF in like 2 years. That place is depressing.
It is, but they used to have retail musing threads, and what would happen in those is like everybody, like, oh my gosh, the PS3 is selling faster than the 360 and the Wii.
It was.
There's a stack of
I remember threads, people talking about how they could find those things everywhere. I mean, there even was a Penny Arcade cartoon about it.
Oh, yeah, but it's one of those things, again, where it's like, you know, it's he says, she said, because you're going to find people who say, oh, it's sold out, I can't find it anywhere. They're going to say, oh, yeah, I can go in the store, and I see, like, 50 of them standing there. So it's one of those, it also depends on where you are. I mean, like, if you're in the middle of nowhere in Kentucky, it's probably not as many people. Where if you're like in New York City, like I am, I assume that if you do go to a lot of stores, it could just be that they're giving you a bunch of shipments because that's where a lot of people do their shopping.
Mm.
And it's always one of those things because it's the same thing with games. Okay, you know what? We're gonna go because we're over like 2 hours at this point.
Oh shit.
yeah.
No news.
No more news. but next week, hopefully, as long as we remember, we should probably be starting our Game of the Year countdown show. So we will do January and February next week, hopefully.
So I can talk about all those games I had high expectations in and then disappointed me.
I can talk about all those games I didn't buy.
Yeah, I didn't play very much this year. Like when I actually sat back and started thinking about it.
I mean, we can talk about it because I think it is one of those years where this year isn't going to be remembered fondly in the console space just because it was either sequels to this
Wait,
and that.
Wait, you sure
or
it wasn't the year of the PS3 this year?
It's the year of the PS3 every year.
In my heart, it always is.
But yeah, I mean, we've done it, this is the third year we've done it. I always enjoy it because come Game of the Year time, a lot of people just forget what comes out in the first six months of the year because...
And spoilers from my side, I will be talking about a lot of downloadable titles.
But I think that's where a lot of the big games this year were. I mean, a lot of people's Game of the Year right now, or a lot of discussion right now is centered around The Walking Dead.
Yeah. That will be a contender.
I assume Journey's up there as well.
Mm-hmm. I should probably still play Journey. Yeah. Huh?
It's very good. I'm not a fan of art games, but I like Journey.
Somewhere I missed out on it.
There's actually a game behind it. That
Journey is
I know.
Kind of game.
It's not long, right?
So yeah.
No, it's quite short.
No.
All right, I will get around to it.
I think you can play it in about 4 hours, maybe.
Anyhow, we can talk about this when we actually do our Game of the Year countdown shows instead of like
I should
now,
say this
so.
Is the first time, like the first time that we've ever done this, that I don't have some obscure anime-based game that I am pulling for with
we'll
all of my...
Yeah.
Since I don't have some niche title that no one else gives a shit about that I still argue for anyway. This is the first year.
Jason will probably have Mass Effect.
Earl has seen my preliminary list. There are some weird niche titles on that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the year of... Not weird niche, but I think it's going to be the year of digital. Either that or Jake 6. I don't think there's any AAA title right now that I could think of that deserves Game of the Year off the top of my head.
I have a retail title on right now on my number one spot, but it's not what many would consider AAA.
I have a retail title as well, but even then I wouldn't consider it a AAA, even if it comes from one of the biggest publishers in the world. And I also think it's not going to win because a lot of people have issues with it, but we will talk about this in the coming weeks. So for Martin, Daniel, Chad, and myself, this has been Dual World in episode 90. We'll be right back.
last summer, your last dance to beat your own drummer. Go out fighting, go out young, a flash of lighting eclipse the sun.